Today's program has been brought to you by TechServe, New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. For more information, visit TechServe.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
What's up, everyone? Another titillating edition of Nothing Urgent. I'm Derek Evers, joined by my partner in crime, Chris Robbins. How are you today, Chris?
I'm great, and I was doing fine until you told me about a procedure you recently had. And
I told you not to bring that up.
Well, we'll talk about it. What's wrong?
There's nothing wrong. I just had a couple doctors, two males and a female, fondle me over the course of the past week, which I thought about it. This is actually the most... I've had men fondle my package in 1 week ever before.
I thought you were going to say this is like the furthest towards third base you've gotten, or some other terrible Tom Arnold joke or something you're going to tell. But it's not.
So, Don't throw Tom Arnold under the bus like that. He's lost a lot of weight lately.
It's very serious, though. What happened to your genitals?
Why do you got... This isn't radio talk. There's a little... I don't know. It felt a little something. I went to the doctor. It's no big deal.
All right. I'm sorry. Tell the good people who's on the show this week.
We have a really, really good show. We're joined by a musician that I know both Chris and I are very fond of, Mr. Mac DeMarco.
Hi.
Thank you for that. That was good. That was very emphatic. That's the right word, right?
That's correct.
Chris is my editor, so.
Joe will make any other corrections necessary in the back room.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
He just shook his head and said no.
No grammar for me. It's not my strong suit.
And we're also joined
by Max Rivlin Nadler, who wrote a piece on civil forfeiture in the NYPD for Gothamist this week. It was superb.
Which is a very interesting topic that we're going to want to dive into in a few minutes. But you can chime in at any point, actually.
All right.
But we have a few questions. We're going to get started with Mac because he came the farthest. He's from Canada.
Yeah, I actually live down like a couple blocks away.
You're not supposed to. We're in Monaco. You're not supposed to give away the trade
studio
secrets.
In Monaco.
Right, right.
The glittering beaches.
Right, yeah, yeah. So, Canada, yeah. Edmonton.
Yeah, on my hat right here.
Oh, he's wearing an Edmonton hat
yeah,
too.
Got it at Christmas. Edmonton's a weird place.
Were you sad about the Oilers? Wait, were you even born when the Oilers left?
No, we still got the Oilers.
Oh wait,
Gretzky left.
And who was it that went to? Who went to the Avalanche? Wasn't that Edmonton?
No, wasn't our team. I mean, it was
the Winnipeg Jets.
See, this is where everybody finds out I'm a bad Canadian because I don't actually care about hockey.
Every other Canadian on the show, though, has said they don't give a shit about hockey. Derek is the only person
I kind of do,
gives...
and I just totally fucked up the one historical reference that I had about Edmonton.
We did lose Gretzky, though, and the town started naming a bunch of streets after him and all this crazy stuff. But, yeah, he's been gone for so long.
Are the streets still named after him, even though he's been, like, named in, like, you know, all these different scandals?
Oh, yeah, it's like Wayne Gretzky Boulevard, the Drive, Statue of Wayne. He's got, like, a castle downtown.
Do you have any pictures next to the Statue of Wayne?
I don't think there's actually a Statue of Wayne, but there are streets, yeah. So, there you go.
Yeah, we have a lot of Canadians on this show. A lot. No.
I don't know
yeah.
It's a pretty big country, believe it or not.
And I ask every Canadian on the show, what's in the middle?
That's where I'm from, the middle part, the crappy part. Well, I don't know if it's... Yeah, it's the crappy part. It's the coldest part. All the towns are super high up from the U.S. border. It's freezing cold. It's...
Do you go, like, ice fishing?
I never... My dad used to buy me ice fishing rods every Christmas. We never went. So
What's
I had like
the difference
six
between
seven
an ice fishing rod and a normal fishing rod?
Normal one is like you really give it a whip. It's like nice and long.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right? Yeah.
But and the ice fishing ones that I got were always like maybe, I don't know, a foot and a half long. Because you just sit there and you dip it in a hole, right? So we actually... we did try and go once, but my dad's van fell through the ice of this lake. So we had to get like a tow truck to winch it out. So it was like not a very sweet experience. I was like standing in the cold. 6 or 7 years old for hours.
You didn't have one of those, you know, those like shed like things that they bring out?
No, we were just.
You mean a shed?
See, this is a, you know, instead of bringing the shed, he thought, I'll just drive my van onto the ice.
Right.
We can sit in a van. But obviously, a van's going to break through the ice. It's a heavy vehicle. So, now there you go.
I always, that part, I mean, since you did not have this experience, maybe you don't know, but I never understood how they could build one of those sheds and have, like, fires going and stuff like that on ice while they're fishing.
See, that's the other thing about ice fishing, I think, that he didn't consider, is that you have to be on pretty thick ice.
Right.
And, yeah, so I don't think, we were on, like, some small lake. It didn't work out too well.
I'm envisioning, like, that would be a good song, talking about ice fishing.
Ice fishing with daddy, baby. So, yeah, I don't know.
Is it a conversion van? Did you have a conversion van?
What is that?
You know, like a van that has, like, that extra little... taste on the top, and then like sometimes curtains in the windows.
I think it was one of those like those kind of like rapey looking vans, like the ones they usually do the murals on the side.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Has the one circular window in
like
the
more
back.
Of a church van sort of style.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
but or like 70s
style.
Style.
Yeah. Yeah, style.
My parents had one of those. Actually, this is when I was little kid, and you know I'm like 60 years old, so we're talking way back there. But they had it was a bed in the back, and they used it as like a camper too.
The Westphalia.
Yeah.
So okay, you move from Edmonton. Are you permanently in Brooklyn, or are you just kind of like a transient touring musician?
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, yeah, I don't know, because I've lived a bunch of places. I lived in Edmonton, lived in Vancouver, Montreal, and then when I was living in Montreal, we started touring a lot. So in the middle of a tour, I kind of wound up here, and I don't know. I mean,
it's probably almost better not to have a permanent location if you're going to be touring so much, right?
Yeah. Or, I mean, I have a girlfriend, so it's kind of like I have to, like, you know, not to say leave her somewhere, but she's somewhere while I'm touring. So, I mean, it's nice that she's here because it's, you know, Brooklyn's great. But,
so she lives, is she a resident of Brooklyn, or is she also kind of just...
We're both kind of like, yeah, we're Canadian. I hope we don't get kicked out. But, like, yeah. It's mostly, you know, I think we're pretty settled.
Well, I want to ask you that, but is that something kosher to ask on the air? Like,
oh, it's fine. We got it set up now.
Do you?
I got this fancy visa. Got Kira visa, too, so we're set. But I've been sneaking across the U.S. border for years and years, so.
It's gotten tougher, though, right? You know what's weird is, like, I don't know if it's just the way I look or whatever, but I grew up in Buffalo, so I've traveled across the border many times. The moment I got above the age of 18, 19, get pulled over.
Yeah.
Almost every time.
Every time, yeah. I don't know what it is. It's weird. I don't know. They just know. They're pumping through cars all day long. So we somehow. I mean, they think they don't want to catch you for like you're a band. You're coming to make like $25 at a show
right,
tonight.
Right.
It's like, because that's what we were doing back in the day. It's like, you know, making no money. It's like, why would you kick me out of your country? I'm like, you know, just spending money there. I'm losing money, but. I don't know. It's they want to catch you for like, you know, smuggling and weed.
Weed or something. Yeah, that's usually what it is. We got our car torn apart one time because they found rolling papers in my friend's backpack.
Yeah.
And there was nothing else in the car. But yeah, they still took the time to.
Yeah, it's harsh, but you know we got across a lot. Well, I mean it was kind of funny. We used to spend all this time getting American to drive the gear down. Then we'd sneak down, delete all the dates off the MySpace page, yada yada yada, and then play to like one person in a basement for like a month. It's like such a hassle.
Yeah, they'd always tell you, say you're recording or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Exactly,
that was always
so many schemes. I'm glad I'm over that part of my life, though. That was so terrible.
But
that was great.
But you tour a ton, though, so it's got to be something that, I mean, do you enjoy that lifestyle? Do you enjoy kind of just, aside from being on the road, like seeing different places?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, yeah, it's amazing. We just, like, for example, we were just in, like, Asia and Australia. That was insane. It's getting weirder because, like, you know, 2 years ago I was like, oh man, like I'd love to tour Europe, and now it's like, oh man, they want us to go back like a fourth time this year. So it's like, it's kind of crazy, but you really can't complain about anything like that because, you know, I'm getting paid to like travel around. I do like the lifestyle. I think as you do it more and more, you kind of got to be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't drink like 35 beers tonight because I did that last night and like the night before that. So,
but you have someone
moderation.
Else. Do you have someone else driving you now? Not to like bring, you know, like talk about your rock star status or
not. We not in the States. I do all the driving, but in Europe, it's like I don't want to drive on the wrong side of the road.
Right,
or something
right,
like that. So, or in the UK, I guess.
No, I know because that goes hand in hand with the drinking thing. That was always the bit. Whenever we do a trip, or you know, I drove some bands in Europe before. Like that was always the toughest thing. Is you'd be drinking, and you'd think, man, I got to wake up to like. Drive this van tomorrow,
yeah,
you know, or drive the car tomorrow.
It's crazy. It was crazy for a while, but you know, I'm getting better at it.
At least Europe is smaller. U.S.
is sort
huge,
of smaller, yeah.
Man. You don't think about it until you're driving 13 hours to the next closest city.
Yeah. Canada's even worse for it, I'll tell you. But something nice about those long Canadian
trips. That's what I was asking. What is in them? I never figured out what's there yet. So, okay, here's a good question about Canada, not to pry on Canada, but we know who comes out of Montreal for the most part. We know who comes out of Vancouver. Is there anything coming out of the middle of Canada?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the funny thing is by the time most people hear about anything from the middle of Canada, they've already gone to Vancouver or to Montreal. For example, me or like... my friend Sean Savage, same thing happened to him. People are starting to pick up on him now. I don't know. The way Edmonton always worked was like the music scene would kind of build up and there'd be a couple great bands and then everybody leaves like after, you know.
So who's Edmonton's like Neil Young?
Neil Young. Probably Sean Savage. People, you know, he's like he's got like, what, 15 albums or something in the last 4 years. I don't know. But it's always different because it's like, for a while, people were really into the really poppy Sean thing. Before that, it was like, you know, the like grindcore, hardcore band or something. I don't know. It changes a lot. And then they're like the real, like, manly rock and roll band. But I don't know. It's kind of a mixed bag. But, you know, some things, you know, come out of the rough every once in a while. I guess a diamond, right? I don't know.
That's the parlance, yeah. Diamond. Yeah. What's it like coming from someplace like that to Brooklyn? I mean, is it just bizarre? I mean, is it just too much shit here?
I think I took baby steps to a place like Brooklyn. So it's, you know, like big, little bit of a bigger city, a little bit bigger. And New York is like huge and terrifying. But I don't know. At first when we got here, it was like, oh. But then you realize, whatever. I mean, maybe if I lived actually in Manhattan, I'd still be a little bit freaked out. But Brooklyn's just kind of like, it's a neighborhood. Right. I don't know.
So you mind if I ask you about your full name?
Yeah, go ahead.
Does anyone ever like refer to you by your full name?
No. I think a lot of people have trouble pronouncing it. I think.
Please pronounce it.
McBriar.
That's a very what is
sounds Scottish?
Yeah, I think it's Scottish.
I honestly don't know.
McBriar.
Well, here's the funny story. It's McBriar Samuel Lanyon DeMarco, but when I was born, it was Werner Winfield McBriar Smith IV. So,
that sounds bad. That should be the name of your next album.
Werner. My first name was Werner for 5 years. That's so weird.
You know,
hey, Werner. So crazy.
Vern, I love that.
Memories of like being called Werner?
Well, that's the thing. Everybody called me Mac anyway because McBriar was still in there. But it was a namesake name, you know, the fourth or whatever.
Right.
Mom and dad break up. Mom's like, fuck you, motherfuckers. So, you know, she switched it up.
So... Do you know that there's a... Well, the reason why I brought it up is, you know, there's a really good ginger ale named Werner's.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I'm a Canada Dry man.
I am as well, but, yeah. You know.
Schweppes is okay.
It's not that good. I'm a big ginger ale fan. That's like one of my things.
Yeah. Derek has no teeth. They're all rotted out. It's disgusting.
So, I'm going to ask you a few more serious questions. Well, this isn't really serious, but you...
Dead serious.
So we did this recap of, like, what we... assumed to be the best music writing of the year on the internet. And one of the things that came up, surprisingly, was the Red Bull story on you.
Oh, yeah.
Which was really well done. But the one thing that came up was your road rage. Would you say you have road rage?
Yeah, I think I get it from my mom. And it's bad here, too. I'll tell you the main problem I have with New York drivers. You get to the stoplight, it's red. You're behind somebody. Light goes green. I guess it's probably everywhere now. Car doesn't go. Why? Texting. They're texting. You know, texting and killing people, yada, yada, yada. I know all that crap. But it's stopping me from going through the green light, and it's so fucking frustrating.
You know what's funny is I have that issue too, but I also know if you're the person, if you're that front person, even if you're not texting, and you don't go the moment the light turns green, the guy behind you is beeping.
Yeah, I kind of love that about here, though, because you can't, like, it's just okay to honk. I love it.
And then you go to other places, and everyone stops at, the four-way stop signs, and, like, they actually stop, come to complete stops, and then you get really angry because you're like, come on.
How often do you drive?
I drive every day. I don't like taking the train too much.
No bike?
I don't
know.
I used to have a bike. Yeah.
Chris is a big anti-driver. He writes yellow journalism pieces on Gothamist against cars all
just
the time.
Because I almost die every day. And you're right. It's the people who are like putting on eyeliner or texting.
Yeah.
Or they're like a part of their sandwich falls out on their lap and they're like digging around
for it. That would be me probably.
I got into an accident one time ejecting a CD. I looked down, I looked up, and the car in front of me stopped short.
What CD was it?
It was Faith No More. I'm old. I told you, man.
Don't worry, officer. This is Faith No More CD. This had to be ejected.
I still remember the song, too. I don't remember the name of it, but if it came on, I'd be like, memories of getting into an accident. Yeah. And what's your... Do you have, like, a worst road rage experience? Like, if you ever, like, you know...
You ever caught yourself out the window or something like that? You ever caught yourself being like, what have I become? What am I doing right now?
I don't know. I kind of enjoy doing it. It's like a nice outlet for me. So I think I'm just enjoying, you know, worst road rage. Yeah, I don't really know. It happens so often, it's hard to pick something out, I guess. And for really, you know, like, you know, very silly, you know, small things. It's just kind of...
I had a kind of interesting situation not too long ago. It was a couple months ago. It was still sunny, if not summer. And we were driving, and my girlfriend... Like, I didn't have sunglasses. It was sunny. So she's like, here, wear mine. So I'm wearing, like, these big girl sunglasses. And then this guy, like, cut me off to the point where we almost got in an accident. And I, like, started yelling at him to the point where I opened the door. Because we were at a stoplight. Opened the door, got out, was, like, screaming at him.
Whoa.
And then realized that I was wearing my girlfriend's sunglasses as I was doing that. So it kind of, you know, weird laughing about that afterwards. But my girlfriend actually approved of that because he almost got us into an accident. So that's about the only time she ever approved of me getting that angry.
Well, you really showed him.
I don't think I've ever stepped out of the car before. But
that's good.
There's always time.
I almost got killed when a couple months ago I was crossing the street and this car comes barreling by, like, big truck, and the guy's going way too fast in the slow zone. I go, like, hey, asshole, slow down. And, like, the dude slams on the brakes and stops, and there's, like, that one moment where I'm sure, like, this guy's going to get out and kill me.
Yeah.
So I don't, just the very, like, New York drivers, the fact that they are, like, not only did I just kill that person, almost kill that person, and, like, they cursed me out, like, now I'm going to finish the job.
Yeah. So, that the other thing I wanted to ask you about that Red Bull article is, how much Red Bull did you drink?
He didn't bring any Red Bull. I was so confused, because, I mean, usually... I don't know. It's not even me that gets the emails for these crazy things anymore, but they were like, this guy from Red Bull's going to come to your house and he's going to stay with you for 2 days. I was like, wow, that's, like, really strange. Like, what is he going to do?
What did the rest of the people at the wallet say about that?
They were just kind of like, who is this guy? But, I mean, there's always weird people in there, so they were just kind of like, all right. But, yeah, I mean, the one thing you'd, as you know, would assume having a Red Bull person there is that he would bring Red Bull. But I guess he, like, was just writing for Red Bull, a music academy. Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with the actual beverage. But all in all, it's just a big pain in my ass. So there you go.
They send us Red Bull to our office, and it's getting out of hand. I don't know if I should say that on the air, because...
I'll come take some of that Red Bull.
Oh, God, please. It's just piling up. I've been... this is the part I shouldn't say on the air. But I've been giving it to people at venues. and Joe walks in with the case.
Here's the bull.
Wow. Finally.
The funny thing about Red Bull, see, now it should be sponsored by them, bastards. So the funny thing about Red Bull is they're like, oh, we've got it, Christmas time, they're like, we got a special something special coming for you. And I was like, oh, cool, like, it's gonna be, like, I don't know, a Christmas present of some sort. You know what the special was?
What?
The large cans of Red Bull.
Nice.
The 16-ounce cans.
The ones that are hard to find.
Gets you extra jacked. That's nice.
Kidney stones, man. We used to drink Rockstar all the time, and my friend got a kidney stone while driving. It was a two Rockstar can a day man, and eventually it caused calcium buildup in his bladder.
It caught up with him.
Yeah.
Those things hurt, I have heard.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
As I've heard, one of my roommate had one at the time. He came in, he's like, my stomach hurts really bad. And I was like, it's just gas. And then he, like, we took him to the hospital, and it was really a kidney stone.
Can you pass those out your urethra?
If they're small enough, okay. Yes.
It's like a little crystal shard.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And if it's not small enough, they zap it with a laser.
Well, that's kind of tight.
Yeah.
I like that.
The laser on the groinal area?
Well, I guess they probably have to slice it open to shoot it with a laser.
No, I think they just...
The skin laser beam.
I don't know how that works.
That's kind of tiny.
I always thought lasers and eyeballs don't mix, and there's LASIK surgery. People do that.
Sorry. Sorry.
It's Red Bull.
It was Dustin Hessier from the Beach Fossils.
Ooh, see? That's the kind of stuff we're bringing together here on Nothing Urgent.
Indie rock, baby.
Well, we're going to take a slight break. I think there's food waiting for us, possibly.
Not for you, listeners.
Yes. Well, there is. Maybe they're getting ready to eat.
Yeah. Play some tunes.
We're going to play, appropriately, a Mac DeMarco track, Eau de Viceroy. Tyson Viceroy.
Viceroy. Yeah, check it.
Can you wait? Do you get those sent down from Canada? Do you still smoke Viceroys?
I do if I can. Kids get like really hurt when they try to bum a smoke off me and I don't have them. But like, I'm not going to get these. You know, Marlboros are fine.
Yeah.
You're like, okay. All I've got is Players.
Yeah.
Those are the only Canadian cigarettes I remember.
Players, Du Maurier, Viceroy, Next, Bling Bling, Booyah.
Those are some sponsors we need to get next.
Man, Joe, your computer is so slow, I can't even use this thing.
Yeah, I should probably get a new one. Do you have any suggestions?
Oh, totally, man. You should go to TechServe.
Okay, what's so good about TechServe?
Well, they've got this awesome new insider program that's free when you get a new Mac with AppleCare. So you should buy your computer there because you get 50% off data transfer, free loaner computers, front-of-the-line repair privileges, an annual Mac tune-up service, backup consultation and setup, seminars, and much more.
Okay, yeah, where's TechServe?
It's at 119 West 23rd Street in New York City. They're New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, and you should totally check out TechServe.com for more information.
All right, that settles it. I'm headed to TechServe.
So you're in your home, and the cops knock on the door, and the cops kick in the door, and they ransack your stuff, and then they take $3,000 from you, and it turns out there was no reason for them to take $3,000 from you, but they get to keep it anyway. That process is called civil forfeiture, and Max Riven-Nadler did a story about it for Gothamist this week. Max, am I describing that correctly, or can you sort of tell the listeners what civil forfeiture is and why it's so inherently fucked up?
Yeah, thanks again. Chris was my editor on the story.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
Conflict of interest.
And it was brought to my attention by some really hardworking and courageous public defenders in the Bronx that they had seen repeatedly clients of theirs coming in and claiming that large amounts of money had been taken by the NYPD during arrests, and they were never going to get it back, and they didn't get it back, and they didn't know how to get it back. And the reason why they didn't know how to get it back was this process called civil forfeiture. Now, over the summer, The New Yorker ran an article that kind of discussed how podunk towns in the middle of, you know,
Texas,
you know, Arizona and stuff would pull people over for traffic violations and then take the cash that they had in the car and refuse to give it back. And that was their way of financing and keeping the town's police in service. But New York City's been doing this practice for a really long time and has recently ramped it up, where basically if you're arrested, the NYPD will open up a civil forfeiture case and try to take your money. And when they do take your money, they will put it into their own pension fund or spend it on their own precinct. And you go to a lot of people around New York and even elected officials, the comptroller's office, and you say, money is being taken from New Yorkers who have been arrested who might not even be charged with a crime and put into the police pension fund. They go, oh, well, obviously that's illegal. The crazy thing is, it's not illegal, and in fact, it's rampant. And through a series of interviews I did with individuals who had been arrested in the Bronx, as well as public defenders and legal experts, you know, it was really seeing that this is not only systemic, but a huge theft of, you know, over the years, millions of dollars from poor New Yorkers who can't hire a lawyer to get their money back because it's not a criminal case, it's a civil case, so they're not even being given a public prosecutor.
But Max, aren't these people degenerate drug dealers? Don't we want to steal their money from them?
Right. So the reason it's ramped up is because in the 90s, the idea was, well, if we can't arrest drug dealers, we'll just take their money. If you see in The Wire, they do this all the time when they're like, well, we're not going to charge them yet, but we're going to take their money. And so people, the NYPD especially, was like, great, this is a wonderful opportunity to buy some really cool things for our office and as well as enrich our own pension fund by just saying that this person we're arresting has no reason to have $3,000 in cash on them. They don't have a receipt for it. Well, you know, a lot of stuff is done in the informal economy, even service work. I'm sure if you go anywhere in Bushwick where young people are, you'll find, you know, hundreds of dollars in cash because they're waitresses or waiters or things like that. So the NYPD is basically saying, well, if you cannot prove that this isn't drug money, we're going to take it. And you're going to have to go through this crazy labyrinthine system to try to get it back. And it's based on an administrative code that was written in 1881 and has been proved unconstitutional by judges twice.
So, all right, so what happens when someone has their money stolen from them, or appropriated by the police department? Right. What, like, how do they get it back, and how often do they get it back?
So in 85% of the arrests where civil forfeiture is pursued by the NYPD, the individual is never charged with a crime. So you're just arrested.
Innocent
and,
is another way of putting
right,
it.
Right. Not even found innocent, though. Not even charged.
Right, right.
So the person is not only innocent, but like shouldn't have been arrested in the first place. And so let's say you're not charged. You're then told that the district attorney says, hey, we're not charging you. We're releasing your money. And you go, great, can I have my money? But then you have to go to the NYPD, and you need to go through all of these hurdles that they place in front of you that are meant to stop you from being able to get your money back. And they're different each time. They don't follow a specific form. They're supposed to wait 180 days to deposit your money into the pension fund. Oftentimes, they do not wait. And once the money is in the pension fund, let's say the NYPD does release it, you're not being reimbursed from the pension fund itself. They're not deducting from it. You're being paid back from the general fund, which is taxpayers' money.
So wait. Stop.
Yeah.
So you and I and Derek and Mac, we all pay for the NYPD to take people's money and then basically not give it back and throw it in their pension fund or buy those little metal ball clacky things for their desks, which are in their defense pretty cool.
Yeah.
But right,
so I like how everyone agreed with that. Yeah.
Well,
we've all been to Spencer Gifts, Your Honor. Anyone going to Spencer Gifts knows. Yes, right. So so taxpayers foot the bill basically. So the NYPD can't lose in this situation.
Right.
You take someone's money and they're a quote unquote bad person. Good for the NYPD. You take someone's money, they're totally innocent. Good for the NYPD.
Right.
What is to be done about such an intractable
problem?
Yeah, this
doesn't sound like de Blasio's New York.
Yeah. Right.
This isn't the New York I signed up for.
Up until like 3 weeks ago, this would be an unthinkable issue to actually broach with the powers that be, because Bloomberg would never touch this, Kelly would never touch this. But it seems like such an easy fix that the de Blasio administration would probably jump on it. That being said, this is a lot of money that the NYPD is used to taking. So if you were to actually say you have to stop doing this, you would face a lot of pushback and maybe a public relations nightmare in the sense of the NYPD saying, listen, we're taking drug dealers' money and we're using it to fight crime. What's wrong with that?
Right.
Now, proposed legislation, and this is once again just some rumblings that I've unofficially heard, is to push through legislation through the city council that makes the NYPD report how much money they take each year through civil forfeiture. That would, in effect, shame them, hopefully, into stopping to take so much money, because people would say, you're telling me that from these people who never got charged, you took, you know, $300,000 just in the Bronx alone?
Right. And let's stress that there's no record that's public whatsoever of how much money comes in or where it's spent. Or what it's spent.
So there's no way to know, like, if they came into my house, they don't keep a record of how much money they took?
No. Well they do, but it's not publicly available. So in other words, you know, it's a good question. Like, well, how often does this happen every year? How much money do you make from this? All those questions are completely unanswered.
But isn't this, you know, and obviously this frustrates me, but
see, you look very frustrated.
I am. But isn't this, like, kind of what they do just in general on a larger scale? You know, post 9/11, there was more parking tickets and they raised up all the like fines for car, you know, like illegally parked cars. Post Sandy, you know, like minor drug charges like blew up because, you know, and it's basically easy way to like get money. I know you mentioned like southern towns, like I know that there's like fees for if you're arrested, you have to pay certain fees, and that just keeps poor people basically, you know, in a cycle of the justice system. Aren't we just talking about a larger scope of that? And so where do you start? Do you start there, or do you start at all these other places?
Well, that's kind of been the cycle of law enforcement and government that's been going on since, you know, you set them up as separate entities, which is law enforcement will try to enrich itself to buy itself cooler gadgets, and government will have to say, well, nope, you can't. We'll draw a line in the sand. You can't do that there. In 1990... they passed a really large forfeiture act federally that tried to separate the profit motive from being able to take people's money. Unfortunately, the New York City Administrative Code has seemed to be resistant to that, as well as the NYPD. So basically, you just need to stay, if you're the government, one step ahead and, okay, we can't allow this anymore. You have to stop this particular practice. I'm sure the NYPD will say, okay, well, now more tickets. There you go. Are you happy now? Or, okay, now more quality of life. And it's just always going to be that game. But
since it's a unconstitutional policy or practice, can't anyone just, like, bring that up when they, you know, like, obviously you mentioned that a lot of people are, you know, can't afford the justice process. But can't they just show up and be like, says it's unconstitutional. Where's my money?
You mean represent yourself?
Or
per se?
Per se.
No, I mean pro se. That's what that's called. Put on a tie. And
I thought you said per se. No. I was like, I understand that word.
Maybe. I don't, you know, Max. I mean, I think that it's not a matter of arguing, you know, pointing to some court decision. I think it's a matter of your case and the specific details of your case. And as Max's piece pointed out, we don't know the legal mechanism by which the NYPD doesn't have to really show its hand here, because it's a civil case. All they have to say is, we suspected this person of breaking the law. We took their money. You know, we still suspect them of certain things. They're innocent. We haven't charged them, but we're going to keep this money in the meantime. Meantime means indefinitely. Indefinitely means forever, you know? So I don't think it's as simple as just being like, hey, in 1993 or 1990, this other
case happened.
And even when public defenders do get involved in these cases, which is, you know, really great when it does happen, but of course doesn't keep up with how many of these cases there are, when they go to the NYPD and say, hey, would you mind showing us the specific administrative code and the specific directive that you're following, the NYPD refuses to.
Right. So it's just a mess, Derek. It's just this
is,
a
this
big
is,
old
yeah, this is just
mess.
Aggravating the hell out of me. What do we do then? Where's de Blasio?
Yeah, well, you know.
You know, they haven't picked up my Christmas trees yet. De Blasio's New York.
Really?
Yeah, our streets are littered with them.
Oh,
and it's Park Slope. He leaves town, and he's not, you know, he's like, they picked it up, and where's Chelsea Manor? Where's that? What's his?
Gracie Mansion.
Gracie Mansion. Gracie
Manor. The haunted house he lives in up there? What's that called?
I think it's a super easy fix. I think the reason why it hasn't been fixed yet is because of that pushback you're going to get from the NYPD.
We have no idea how much money, you know, they might very well need that money.
Right, right.
But
I mean, we're joking
know.
About clackers, you know, ball clackers, but they probably are actually using that. I mean, pension fund sounds important to a retired police officer.
So a reader asked me a question or emailed me a question that I thought was like a decent question, but I had my own answer to it. He was saying, if it's going in the pension fund, doesn't that help taxpayers? Because, hey, you know, it reduces our obligation to put money in
our
that would go in the pension fund anyway. Do you want to respond to why? I mean,
this is a great question and kind of feeds back into, like, why has the city not been as responsive to this, even though they're obviously aware, because, you know, they need that money. The city needs that money to pay off the pension fund. That being said, the amount that the city contributes to the NYPD pension fund is so big. It's such a big part of the city budget. I doubt that this has like such a massive.
For those less familiar,
for those
less familiar with the New York City budget, like 98 or 99% of the money allocated from the city goes to paying pensions and salaries.
Right.
All of the cars, gadgets, upkeep, all that stuff mainly comes from the federal government. So the pension fund, they argue like, hey, we need this money, and they probably do. But
I have the answer, and you can bring this up to de Blasio if you want.
Okay.
Here's the answer. Or Bratton, right? That's the new guy?
Yeah.
The new police commissioner, yeah.
The answer is take it back to Kings of New York Day, where you just have separate police forces and let them fight it out to be who's the more powerful one.
Sounds reasonable.
And then that way, you'd be like, oh, well, we could do this. And then maybe
perhaps we televise such a fight.
Or you sound like a Gothamist commenter.
Or maybe you make it a true, like, you know, well, I guess you couldn't really do it. I was going to say, maybe you make that like a government contract. Be like, well, we'll be your security force. You know, we'll do it for cheaper.
But the question on everyone's mind, of course, is what does Mac think about all this?
Yes. What does Mac think about all of this?
I'm Canadian, dude.
Yeah. He's like, I'm not paying taxes. I don't care.
I think I do. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I don't know.
No, everyone does. Whenever you buy something, you know? Like
whenever you
get a parking ticket or whenever you pay a parking meter.
Oh, I don't pay my parking tickets. Well.
we can strike that.
Yeah, we can strike that, right, Joe? Cool.
I don't care. Give me as many tickets as you want, NYPD.
Well, Max, that's an incredibly frustrating story you just told us.
Yeah, I'm super sorry that it's not more upbeat, but let's end on an upbeat note about this, is that this is a totally winnable topic. It's not intractable in any sense, like, oh, I think the NYPD is racist, you know, they are. But this is something that, with, like, good progressive legislation, you can really get rid of this practice because it's operating in the shadows,
right?
And the only reason it's able to operate is because it's in the shadows. So bring it to the light
and keep the money from the bad guys. Great, whatever. That seems reasonable, but not if someone's innocent. That's wrong.
Did anyone else just think of Sunny Day Real Estate in the shadows when he said that?
No, I haven't thought about Sunny Day Real Estate in many years.
It's funny, they've been coming up a lot in the office since, like, there's this new, like, emo revival going on.
Yeah. But acid forfeiture is wrong, too.
Yeah.
But that's a whole different
article. And so is Sunny Day Real Estate, frankly.
Oh, God. I love that pen. Anyway, so we're going to wrap up here. We've got about 15 more minutes. Mac was nice enough to stay with us. This was a little bit confusing. We have Mac and Max.
I think our listeners can differentiate a letter.
Maybe your listeners.
Mm, okay.
My listeners are a little bit more lowbrow. And so
they listen for the guttural noises that come out of the box on their desk.
They were riveted when you were talking about ball procedures, and now they've just like, they've just,
right, whatever.
They've just kind of like signed off. So In preparation of Mac coming down, I almost said Max. In preparation of Mac coming down, we solicited a few questions on the interweb. And as we expected, the Twitter followers were...
they let us down.
No, I was going to try to come up with a way to pump them up, but...
No, they sucked. But there's some good questions.
There are some good questions. I'm going to start with something very, very formal. It comes via Ton Startbat.
Okay.
I know I'm saying it close to right. Why do you love Ed more than Andy?
I've just lived with him longer, that's all.
It's an honest answer.
Yeah, Andy. They sent us picture advice of you, like, hanging out, or not advice, evidence of you hanging out with Ed, and then they said they still want to know your final choice in White Bros, so you're going with Ed,
it's,
huh?
It's pretty neck and neck right now. Me and Andy took a drive to way deep South Brooklyn today, just the two of us, so wow. You never know what's going to happen, really.
So then we have another one that comes via, well, this question kind of goes back to your youth. Did you ever get picked on for the gap tooth?
No, I never really got picked on. I think I was more of maybe I got bullied a little bit, but I don't think it was ever directed at the teeth. But could have been, maybe, I don't know.
I had a friend who had a gap tooth, and there was those Gap commercials that were very popular, and yeah. The slogan was "Fall into the Gap." So whenever he would walk into a room, be like, "Find you the gap, find," and then he would like have to shield his mouth.
And now he committed suicide.
No. Now he's a very successful man. His gap remains, and it's very charming.
He's got this horrible snaggle tooth that just can't get over.
No, he got through it. It was fine. It was just minor teasing.
I remember being. I had a birthday party, and a bunch of my friends found. My mom used to have a boyfriend who rode Harley Davidsons. And they found her leather, like, chaps. And they thought that she wore them without jeans underneath. So I got a lot of, like, yeah, your mom's, like, a hooker that wears, like, assless chaps. But nothing for the gap tooth, I guess.
When I was younger, we used to go to this club that the downstairs was a rock club and upstairs was, like, a goth club. And there would always be this one dude who would show up wearing assless chaps all the time.
It's a good look, I'll tell you.
It was a good look. I think he wore thongs, but I think that was only for legal purposes. But for, to not be, like, indecently exposed. Yeah. This is a question I feel a little bit uncomfortable to ask you. This will be the last Twitter one. And I don't know if it makes you uncomfortable. We can cut it if we need to.
Yeah, I'm sure.
The question is, why did you have to call my friend Sugar Tits 2 years ago?
Sugar Tits? Who the hell did I call Sugar Tits?
What are you, from like the 1950s?
Hey, Sugar Tits. Sugar Tits. Yeah, I don't know. Is there a photo with this?
It says the venue.
What's
the it's Death by Audio. I didn't want to make it so that like, in case
Death
maybe
by Audio,
person...
I called a girl Sugar Tits? Man, I must have been pretty drunk that
night. It might not be a girl, though. That's the other thing.
Can I ask my question?
Yes, about, you can.
So you did a shot by the band thing for Imposed, where you disposable camera.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There was one. There was a lot of asses.
I think our camera might have gotten... Because we got two... I don't know. Every time we get one of those shot by the band, they get mixed up. But I think you guys might have gotten Dent May's camera from us. But I'm not sure.
I think they did. You guys did both, didn't you? Didn't you guys take any pictures of each other or something like that?
We both had cameras. I think we had two. We, like, are so bad at returning the cameras and these things. They always get lost. And we always have a very strange photo. But what...
So there's one photo of several asses. Yeah. Your ass featured most prominently.
Yeah.
But it looked like it hadn't been wiped properly. And this is in, like, 2010, maybe.
Was, like, the year and a half ago.
Yeah, yeah. So I was wondering if you had changed your ass wiping technique since 2010.
See, this is the problem I have, because there's a lot of photos of my ass on the internet. Right.
There's a whole video.
That was actually where I was going to go with the question is, what is up with, you wanting to show your ass all the time?
I just think it's, people want to take a photo. Yeah, it's just a bit silly, but the thing is, a lot of men are plagued by this. You got a lot of ass hair.
Yeah.
And especially in the butt crack. And under the light, the right light, especially on film, like a disposable.
I didn't think about that.
Looks like a poopy bum crack. And I'm not saying I don't have a poopy bum crack, because right. That was CMJ. I was playing like 11 shows in a week and like sleeping on floors. So it probably was full of poop. I don't know. But, yeah, it's a bit deceiving. If I had a completely clean baby ass...
Well, then you wouldn't be
look
real.
As poopy. Exactly.
Yeah.
I could just get a shave job. I actually did shave my butthole once in high school. Because it's freaky when you start getting butt crack hair. You're like, what the fuck is
that? How'd you do that?
In the bathtub. In my mom's bathtub with one of her leg raises. Yeah, legs up. Yeah.
I was going to say, maybe you did it like looking between.
I'm going to give a little bit of advice to anyone that hears this program. Don't do it.
You did it with a razor. Oh, yeah.
Grows back like two hugging cactuses. It's terrible.
That is the best visual I've ever had.
So terrible.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw this out there. I've always wanted to go and get waxed just to see what it's like. Just to see what that... But then I was afraid because I'm also
just told you what that was like.
A slightly hairier person.
I think waxing... Because when you wax, your hair grows back very soft, doesn't it? I think.
I'll ask my girlfriend.
I'm not sure. Is that true? Usually? Yeah, better than shaving, yeah.
But my fear is that, like, I'll look like I'm wearing, like... leg hair pants, because like how far do they go down, you know? At some point it's like if you don't stop. I mean,
I don't know.
Mac, when I describe you to people, and I want you to tell me if this is accurate,
sure,
I say he's a mix of Jonathan Richman and Beetlejuice.
Yeah, I guess I would probably.
Does that work for you?
It works for me, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, totally.
Because once I realized, like, you got that Beetlejuice thing going on stage and, like, my hair, deep voice.
It's my hair, too, once it gets to about this point.
Yeah.
It just can't That's help but point. Look like yeah. Beetlejuice.
It's
yeah.
Michael Keaton, like, fluff, sort of.
Yeah,
like,
and just, like, swaggering around on stage. Yeah,
like cracked out looking.
I watched, this is getting off topic now, but I watched the Michael Keaton Batman last night, and I was very surprised at how comedic it really is.
Oh, the one with the penguin and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, he himself, he's, like, it's a little slapsticky. I didn't realize it.
Huh. That movie used to scare the crap out of me. I haven't watched it in years.
Yeah, the part where the penguin bites the guy's nose.
Yeah.
That and, like, the part where, like, you know, the whole penguin thing is so spooky. I don't know. Just...
I agree.
Tim Burton. That first one was good. Then it got.
The penguins with rockets and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing. It was.
Man, it scarred me, too.
Was almost elected mayor of the penguin.
Yeah.
That's
How
true.
Awkward would that have been?
So Mac, we've got to wrap things up. We really appreciate you you coming by.
My pleasure.
And
thanks for the pizza.
Can you
and the Red Bull?
Do you want to take us out by reading a passage?
Yes.
A dramatic reading, if you will.
I brought in. I read a. It's kind of like my Bible. I read a passage from this every night before I go to bed. It's called "Louder Than Hell," and it's a definitive oral history of metal.
A rockography, if you will.
Yeah, it touches on all the greats. And right here we've got a little quote that has inspired me through working with my label and playing shows over the past few years. It's a quote from Fred Durst. Everything on Significant Other blows me away. We nailed it. Every song in its own entity. I can't think of a song that I'm not excited about. I think maybe I want to redo one chorus that I didn't get to do. But I was happy about everything else. We just went in and did it. Real natural. And then a little bit further he says, I really dug into myself and pulled a lot of stuff out. There's songs about sex and about breaking stuff.
I think you kept the spirit and with which that was, yeah.
That, yes. I do think songs about sex and breaking stuff kind of summarizes
Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
And rock and roll.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Mac,
did it all for the nookie.
We did it all for the nookie.
Yeah.
Mac, thank you so much. Max, thank you as well for the informative, angrifying. That's a word I made up. You can use that. Angrifying.
Then go and listen to Max music and chill out.
Yeah, and chill out. Thank you again, and we'll see you next week.
God bless.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.